You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzo with the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We're going to pull an Ed Sullivan here and tell you we got a really, really, really great show lined up for you all tonight. But I really do damn mean it. Where do we start? All right, let's go in order of how the guests are going to be joining us. Joe Lisi, GoForTheTwo.com is going to join us. The Boca Raton Bowl goes down this evening. The pageantry, the tradition of the Boca Raton Bowl. Boca Raton! All right, should be a track meet this evening as well. We're going to run the gauntlet. We're going to talk about a bunch of college football bowl games with Joe Lisi. We're also going to talk football with a guy that I think he knows a thing or two about football. Let's see. He's a Rose Bowl champion. He's a Super Bowl champion as a head coach. And in fact, Dick Vermeil has a coach at the high school level, the junior college level, the collegiate level, and the professional football level. And he's been damn successful everywhere he's been. Head coach Dick Vermeil joins me on the program this afternoon. And I'm really looking forward to talking to the coach today because as somebody that was a college coach, somebody that was an NFL coach, NFL executive, I'm really looking forward to his take on players bailing on their teams and missing their bowl games. So Dick Vermeil is going to join us. But we're not done yet. Not done yet. If you think $19.99 is a great deal, hold on a second, because we're going to blow your mind right now. You're going to tell me, Renzi, you can't get all this. You're getting all this for free right now? That's right. That's right. We're going to break it down. Coach Nick, bballbreakdown.com, going to step up and in and join us. We'll talk some basketball, a couple of big-time games on the board this evening. We've got the Houston Rockets on the board tonight, taking on the San Antonio Spurs. All right, so as I promised, we've got a ton of stuff to get to, but let's start off by talking about Leonard Fournette, McCaffrey deciding not to play in their respective bowl games. That's all everybody's talking about right now as the bowl season has begun. Now, let me just first things first by stating that over the years, there have been very, very few people who have called out the NCAA as much as I have for their, their hypocriticalness, the fact that up until like a couple of years ago, and hold on a second, this stupid headset just, who ruined my Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? This headset ruining everything every day. It's like... All right, note to self, don't do the intro with a headset on anymore. Headset sucks! All right, so where was I? Oh, yeah, ripping the NCAA. I mean, come on, man, it's a violation to give a kid a... You can give a kid a bagel, seriously. If you're the school, you can give a kid a bagel, but, you couldn't put cream cheese on it because that would be a violation. That's how ridiculous it is. You know, when players win a college championship, they get like $400 rings because it's against rules. It's against rules to actually treat the kids fairly. Give them a real damn diamond encrusted ring. You win a national championship. You think that Nick Saban's walking around? You think his national championship rings cost $299 at Zales? Like, or do you think he's got diamond encrusted rings? I remember when UConn won the college basketball championship. The kids all got like $199 replica rings. Meanwhile, the coaching staff and everyone at the school, they all got like $13,000 diamond rings. You know who's got a ring? Jim Nantz. I don't know why Jim Nantz got a ring, but Jim Nantz was buddies with Jim Calhoun. Somehow Jim Nantz ended up getting a real ring, but the kids on the team didn't, all right? So listen, I've ripped the NCAA as much as anybody has over the years. I've often stated, if a coach leaves, then the player should be able to leave too. None of this crap. We see these coaches, they preach loyalty, they preach tradition, they preach respect, they preach about being accountable to each other and the school and their teammates, and then the first opportunity they get, they bolt to Purdue or wherever the hell else they get offered, as long as they're climbing the ladder, right? And that's always been acceptable because let's be honest, honest. Nobody really gives a crap about the kids. Shut up and play. And I've always cared. I've always had the kids' backs. But right now, they've gone too far. And I say, shut up and play. The fact of the matter is, listen, Leonard Fournette's been hurt all year long. But he's also been a head case all year long. He was deciding what he was going to play all season long. And I got to tell you something. If a kid is already worried about himself in college, and he's already a me-first guy before he's rich, how do you think he's going to be once he has money? And, you know, you get McCaffrey right now. Now, I'm harder on McCaffrey here because he's not hurt. You know, he's a little banged up, little dinged up. Fournette, whatever. But, you know, McCaffrey doesn't want to play because he's got to prep for the draft. Well, maybe if they would have known this, actually, if you were going to play in a bowl game, maybe they wouldn't have given you the ball 60% of the time this year. Maybe they wouldn't have tried to get you the Heisman. Now, listen, I don't think these players owe the school anything, all right? They don't owe the school anything. There's no loyalty amongst thieves. But you're accountable to your damn teammates, all right? Byron freaking Leftwich. Guy broke his leg, all right? It was a regular season college football game. He broke his leg. Did he tap out? No, he didn't tap out. He continued to play. His old lineman carried him down the damn field. He couldn't walk. He could throw the ball, but he couldn't walk. So they carried him down the field. Byron Leftwich went on, and last time I checked, had a pretty successful NFL career and made a ton of money. The fact of the matter is, we live in a soft-ass, pansy-ass world right now. Men eat tofu. Men are eating salads. Men are wearing skinny jeans and walking around with purses. All right? It's a wussification world right now, in which somehow Caitlyn Jenner was the man of the year. All right? And the fact of the matter is, the selfishness and the wussification with a P of our society has finally caught up to the sport of football. And I've told you guys this over the years. You look at the modern National Football League player, Cam Newton. Cam Newton would be more suited to play in the NBA. Odell Beckham. You know, more about the show. The fact of the matter is, these guys have already made it. It's not about winning. The fans care a hell of a lot more about whether the Buffalo Bills win or lose than LeSean McCoy does. LeSean McCoy cares about LeSean McCoy and his fat-ass contract. He's already won. As Sammy Watkins said last year, when people said, hey, Sammy, you're soft. How come you don't play? And he said, well, at least I don't have a minimum wage, sad sack, pathetic job, and I don't live in Buffalo 12 months a year. That's what they really think. It's not about winning. But it's our society as a whole. We're disconnected. I live in a condo with thousands of people. I couldn't name one person's name in a damn building. I got a neighbor that gives me dirty looks every day. She smokes away on her balcony. If my place is on fire, I don't think she would urinate on me. But that's the way that we live right now. I used to think it was just me. Then I realized you're all just a bunch of walking dead zombies walking around staring at your freaking phone all day long. As Bo Schembechler once so eloquently stated in his famous speech, the team, the team, the team. And what did he say in that speech? He said, this is the last time, guys, they're at the Rose Bowl. He said, this is the last time you'll ever play as a team. He goes, in the future, you'll play for a contract, you'll play for your agent, you'll play for this, you'll play for that, but you'll never be part of something bigger. You'll never be part of the team. And what bothers me the most is the fact that this is accepted right now. In the same fashion that it's accepted not to play for your country because, oh, you know what, I got to go to the summer league. I got a shoe deal I got to worry about. My grandfather played in National Hockey League. He gave up his career in the prime of his career to go fight the Nazis. All right? Today's kids, their biggest problem is their cell phone battery died. We live in a self-entitled, spoiled little punk-ass brat world right now. And I'll tell you what, Fournette, and I'll tell you what, McCaffrey, you guys can still ball, and you know, you're within your rights. I get it. I don't like it. But if I'm an NFL GM, there's no way in hell I'm drafting your selfish asses. Game Time Decisions continues.
I'm
Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. I wish I could swear on this network, man. It's really starting to upset me. And I had more stuff to go on about that opening rant as well, man. Like, you know, we got the World Junior Hockey Championships coming up in a couple of days, right? That's all the top young hockey prospects in the world, right? How many of them are not playing? Because I don't know, you know, I might get hurt, and yeah, it might affect my draft status because I might get hurt playing in this elite tournament. How many are not playing? None! Because you get cut. But whatever, man. We live in a world in which, you know, you can be a basketball player and not be able to hit a free throw. Right? You know, we live in a world in which you can run for office and either not, A, Trump not know what the hell you're talking about, or B, lie about everything you're talking about, and Hillary, and that's the bar that's set. The bar is like this low for society now. You know, this low. All right, let's bring in, all right, so yeah, we got Dick Vermeil joining us on the program. I'm sure Dick's real happy to join a madman like me. Yeah, we got Coach Nick, B-Ball Breakdown, and we got Joe Lisi. What's up, Joe?
Hey, Gabe, how are you? Love the show, my friend, love the show.
All right, Joe, so I know your take is a little different than mine, and let me just stress by stating, I understand it, because only dumb and dead people don't see multiple sides to stories, right? So I understand the mentality of these players not playing. I get it. But just because I understand something doesn't mean I have to like something, right? I understand what Vegemite is. I know what Vegemite is. I don't like Vegemite. I know who Justin Bieber is. I don't like him. But I understand him. And it's the same thing with this. I get it, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I'm with you, Gabe. I'm an old school type of guy, so I understand why Leonard Fournette, Christian McCaffrey aren't playing in their respective bowl games, but I don't like it either. I was a former player, and at the high school level went on to play 1 year of college football. I would want to play in my bowl game with my teammates. That's just the type of guy that I am.
Exactly, I Joe. You don't owe the school anything. It's not that they owe the school and all they gave you a chance. None of that crap, because I'm not buying into that, and I see all sides of this. But your teammates. And is Leonard Fournette the only kid on LSU that's going to the NFL? No. No. So why is he more special than the other ones? You know, that's the thing to me. And if a kid is, you know, I mean, let's go back to Javonian Clowney at South Carolina. He pulled this crap too. What's happened in the NFL? He's always hurt. He's been a big bust. You know, he made a couple of plays last week. Oh, yeah, thanks. We gave you $40 million. You know, he's always hurt. And he did the same crap. And if you're a player who's selfish and worried about getting injured and worried about yourself, when you're poor and you got no money, how the hell are you going to be when you got money, Joe?
That's a great point, Gabe. I mean, these players today, I think, are a lot softer than in years past. And you're talking about a player in Leonard Fournette that is a top five pick. I agree with you. It is the teammates, the guys that you work with in the offseason, the guys that you look at and stare at in the huddle. I have your back, you have mine. You're letting them down. It's not so much the fans. It's not so much your family. It is your teammates that you grind and sweat with each and every week to make wins and losses on the football field. So I feel bad for them. You're letting them down. And I'm in agreement with you. I understand it, but I don't like it, Gabe.
All right, Joe, so we got the Boca Raton Bowl this evening. One thing, as you stated with Fournette, if I'm McCaffrey, you're playing a dangerous game. Because I don't know, like, if you, you know, you really think how great you are, but if I'm you, I want to score another four touchdowns in a bowl game, just to put an explanation point on things. Fournette, he's been banged up all year. I sort of get it. But watch, so watch. Then watch, they're not going to participate in drills at the combine, Joe, right? So that's all right. So you didn't play in the bowl game. You're not doing the combine, but you want me to give you $38 million. Not me. Next, I'll find another kid. I'll find a kid like Myles Garrett on your A&M Aggies that says, I'm looking forward to playing in the bowl game. And this kid's going to be a top three pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, I'm with you, Gabe. That's the type of guy that you want on your football team. And I think Leonard Fournette is the exception. He got hurt week number 4 against Auburn, has been battling a high ankle sprain all year long. Christian McCaffrey, on the other hand, again, in my opinion, I think his team is going to struggle without him against North Carolina. And more importantly, I don't think Christian McCaffrey, in my opinion, is a top 10 pick in the NFL draft. Haven't seen it consistently against the better teams on Stanford's schedule throughout his career. So we'll see how he fares. But I'm in agreement with you. Don't like the situation with players sitting out.
I don't know. And his father, Ed, was a pretty tough guy, too. So I don't know how his father would feel about this. But nevertheless, Boca Raton Bowl, speaking of tough, they don't get any tougher than Boca Raton. They should have had this game a little bit early because, you know, the citizens of the city usually go to bed by about 9 o'clock, Joe. Boca Raton, Florida. We got Memphis and Western Kentucky. Should be a track meet. Like, the first six bowl games all been low scoring, kind of boring, to be honest with you. This one shouldn't be low scoring, and I don't think it's going to be boring. Two exciting teams tonight.
Yeah, it really is. And Western Kentucky is without their head coach, Jeff Fromm, who went on to become the head coach at Purdue. But I still like what Western Kentucky does from an offensive perspective, rushing the football for 180 yards on the ground, 336 through the air with quarterback Mike White. And defensively, Gabe, very solid. They have 29 sacks on the year and holding opposing offenses to 38% on third down conversions. And they're 4-2 this year on the road. And I look at their rush defense, only giving up 99 rushing yards per game. Like that statistic heading into this matchup, you look at Memphis's offensive line, Gabe, has allowed already 30 sacks on the year, and they can't generate a pass rush. Memphis only has 17 sacks on the 2016 season. I think Mike White picks apart the Tiger secondary, and they win this game convincingly by about 14 points or more tonight.
Yeah, both these programs did a good job replacing star quarterbacks. Of course, Paxton Lynch on to the Denver Broncos from Memphis. Can't forget about Brendan Doughty and how good he was with Western Kentucky, hooking up with Higsby, who's now on the Rams, too. And like you said, Mike White didn't miss a beat. And as much as I bitch about players missing bowl games, it angers me the coaches bail before the bowl game, too. They shouldn't be allowed to negotiate until after the bowl games. But that's another story as well. But, you know, you look, it should be a track meet, but ultimately Western Kentucky, to me, as you stated, a better defense and a better offense as well. Toppers, Hilltoppers, coolest name in sport. They're putting up 45 points per game. They're giving up 24. Tigers, 39. They give up 27. Going to be a track meet. I like Western Kentucky to get it done tonight and the over. Quick take on tomorrow's game, Poinsettia Bowl. BYU and Wyoming. BYU are 10-point favorites in this game. How much of an impact do you think it has on their offense that Hill is out and Magnum is in?
I think a big impact. Two different types of offenses with Taysom Hill at the quarterback position. He's a dual threat quarterback, a mobile quarterback that can get outside of a pass rush. And Tanner Magnum is a prototypical dropback passer that has played sparingly this year. He did set BYU freshman records last year, but how will the time off affect quarterback to wide receiver relationship? And you look at Wyoming's offense, Gabe, 200 rushing yards per game, 200 passing yards per game, very balanced, and they proved something to me in the Mountain West Championship game in both games against a very physical San Diego State Aztec defense and offensive lines. They played toe-to-toe with San Diego State. I like Wyoming to get this victory. I think they'll be able to run the football consistently, work off a play action, and attack BYU secondary that's given up 255 passing yards per game.
Calling an upset victory, 10-point underdog winning outright. And I'll tell you one thing with Wyoming here, too, as you mentioned. They beat San Diego State a couple of weeks ago, then they lost the rematch in the conference championship game. But we saw how good San Diego State were when they kicked the crap out of the Houston Cougars. And motivation is always a big factor in these bowl games, Joe. Now, these guys are former division conference rivals, of course, back in the WAC days, of course, man. Hard to keep up with all the conference realignment. But because when I saw this matchup, I was like, yeah, these guys, aren't they both Mountain West? And I was like, no, WAC. We're going back a ways in the old WAC days. But Wyoming are going to be fired up for this game. You know, they are getting 10 points. I think we got a live dog in that game, too. And quickly on this one, Joe, hopefully we catch up later in the week. Yeah, we'll hit the weekend games. But the famous Idaho Potato Bowl. How about the Idaho Vandals, man? These guys were so bad, they voluntarily said, hey, we're going to go to FCS after next year. We don't want to play with the big boys anymore. Then they go out and win 8 games and go to a bowl game.
Yeah, I think a great job what Idaho's done with quarterback Linehan, 15 touchdown passes on the year, but I think they really have their work cut out for them against a balanced Colorado State team that's rushing for over 200, passing for over 200. I think they have the edge at the coaching position, too, with Mike Bobo. Offensive line has only allowed 12 sacks on the year. Nick Stevens started the year with 2 interceptions. Since that game, 1 interception the rest of the year. I like Colorado State to dominate this matchup. I think they win this game convincingly, 20 points or more. I think it's a blowout special for the Rams in this matchup.
Yeah, I agree with you on this one. Colorado State are a dangerous football team, and the Vegas betting market, we're all aware of these guys. They're on a roll. They're a covering machine all year long. Stevens came in at QB, was the starter, lost a job, got it back due to an injury for Colin Hill, but played great, 14 touchdown passes, only 1 interception as well. I think this one gets away from Idaho a little bit, and the Rams kick the crap out of him. It should be noted, though, Matt Linehan, quarterback of the Vandals, if you're wondering about the last name. Yes, indeed, that is Scott Linehan's son, the offensive coordinator of the Dallas Cowboys, and, of course, former head coach in the National Football League. That's his kid, Joe.
Yeah, he's a great talent. Yeah, I think he has the intangibles to play on the next level. Not going to be drafted in this upcoming draft, but could stick on as a free agent or a practice squad kid. So keep an eye out for him. Make solid decisions and has a strong arm. Look for him on the next level.
I'm going to be keeping my eye out for Jerry Jones's grandkid there. I saw he won the state title in Texas the other day. It looks like a running style quarterback though. So and only I guess he's only. He was only a freshman, actually. He's got a couple of years of high school football left. Looks like a big kid. Man, he must be real popular and really hated at the same time, huh? You know, you're Jerry Jones's grandkid. Guys on the other team thinking, if I kill this kid on the field, man, I'm never going to get drafted by the Cowboys. But we got to get out of here, Joe. Always a pleasure, man.
Love the show, Gabe. Anytime. Have a great week.
There's Joe Lisi with us. We'll catch up with Joe later in the week. We're going to talk football, one of the all-time greats. Dick Vermeil joins me next. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network continues. It's our honor to welcome one of the greatest coaches to coach the sport of football, and a man who just didn't coach the game, but life lessons as well at the high school level, at the JUCO level, at the NCAA collegiate level, Rose Bowl winner, and of course a Super Bowl champion as well with the St. Louis Rams. Mr. Dick Vermeil joins us on the Fantasy Sports Network. Coach, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Nice to be with you.
So, Coach, ton of stuff I want to get to, so we'll get right down to business here. There's been a lot of talk over the last 48 hours of big time college prospects skipping their bowl games to prepare for the National Football League. First, Leonard Fournette, and now Christian McCaffrey out of Stanford. I think Fournette was, you know, he's legitimately high ankle sprain is a cause of concern, and it has been all year. McCaffrey seems to be just more so worried about injury. You've been on all sides of this, Coach, at the college level, the pro level. What's your take on these kids not playing in their bowl games?
I would like to see him play, you know, because I've been a college football coach, and I know what kind of contribution that caliber of player makes to your team. And I think those kids owe something to their team because they would all like to be bowl champions. But, you know, I don't have all the answers, but I would prefer to see them play.
Coach, so if you're, so that's from the college coach perspective. How about if you're an NFL coach? In the back of your mind, does it cross your mind ever to think, if this kid was only worried about himself in college and he didn't care about his teammates, then I don't know if I want this guy here, or is it just purely skill and talent alone when evaluating an NFL player?
if I were an NFL player, I'd want him to play with, for his team. And I don't think it's a really a big negative, a negative picture of what the kid really is all about. I think he's more or less proved what he's all about, especially McCaffrey. I know him. I've seen him play. I knew his dad. I've seen him play, and he's got great character. Great. But it is still, that doesn't mean it's not disappointing. But if I were an NFL coach and he asked me, I'd say go play.
Coach, you know, you've been around the sport of football so long. One thing that fascinates me about Nick Saban, and, you know, maybe his personality has rubbed some people the wrong way, but I look at the success that he's had, and I heard Lane Kiffin talk about one of the reasons why Saban's so good is because he adapts. He doesn't like throwing the ball all the time, but he understands that, you know, we have to do this now. This is where we're at. He sort of adapted with the game. Man, the sport is changed so much, isn't it? I mean, we had Jerry Kramer on the program last week. We were talking about guys, you know, Vince Lombardi was telling people to run through brick walls, and they actually tried to.
I wouldn't doubt it. I wouldn't doubt it. Well, you know, the game has changed. Just like the horsepower in your car has changed from the early 70s to the 80s to the 90s to what it is today. You know, we're driving around in cars with average of 300 horsepower. And the NFL's done the same thing. They're driving around, college football as well. They're moving around with a lot of horsepower today, and they're moving it in many different ways, including the forward pass, at a much higher rate than they used to.
So what was different? What was different about the guys? Was it the training? Like, what was the difference between a Kurt Warner and a Jaws and a Ron Jaworski when you were coach of the Eagles? I remember talking to L.A. King players in the 70s, in the 80s, they were telling me, they said, Gabe, we didn't even know there was a gym in the arena. There was no workout program. We sort of just showed up. Training camp was to get in shape. But what was the difference between a football player in the early 80s coach and then when you were coaching with the Rams, the more modern player?
Well, the more modern player was bigger, faster, and making more money. A little, sometimes a little further along in sophistication on and off the field. But really, they're the base. They're the same kids. If you surround yourself with the kind of personalities you want on your football team from a character standpoint, they haven't changed that much. They really haven't. You know, I started in the league in 1969, so I've been late 69, 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000s. And, you know, I never treated them any different. Hopefully, I treated them better as I got better myself.
Well, there wasn't many coaches that treated their players better and were more loved by the players than you were, Coach. And I wanted to get your take on Dak Prescott, because I see Dak and I couldn't help but think of Kurt Warner and the Kurt Warner story. And obviously Dak hasn't come anywhere near you. I'm not saying he's the next Kurt Warner. He hasn't accomplished that. But it's almost destiny that put him in the position that he was in. And it just makes me wonder, how many other quarterbacks are out there, how many other human beings in any job, in any walk of life, Coach, are diamonds in the rough that we don't know about because they haven't had a chance or they haven't gotten that opportunity yet? And it makes me think about Kurt Warner getting his shot after Trent Green went down. Was there ever a time, Coach, did you guys think, we got to get a quarterback because I'm not sure if Kurt can do this?
You know something, first off, we didn't have a lot of time because it was right at, he went down during the third preseason game of the year, so we had one more preseason game.
Yeah.
And he'd been with us for a year. He'd been with us in two training camps. He'd only played 16 snaps, but we had a very good feeling that he could play well enough for us to win. We couldn't anticipate the fact that he would take us on into a Super Bowl and ended up being the MVP. That's impossible. But, you know, he wasn't a rookie. He went and paid his dues in the Arena League. He paid his dues in Europe League. He came back. So he gained a lot of self-confidence and poise as he matured. And he was a few years older than a rookie would be today. But most kids played a lot more football coming out of college than he did, too, to be where he ended up. So there aren't many of them around. There probably will never be another guy do what he did, okay? I don't believe it'll ever happen again. But this Prescott kid, as a rookie coming out, is as good as I've ever seen. You know, and I know this kid right here, Wentz in Philadelphia, is a good one, but I think Prescott throws the ball accurately, more accurately downfield, deep, than our Carson does right now.
Coach, you are featured in the Showtime documentary that takes a look at Lawrence Phillips's life. And, you know, I wanted to ask you about this, and it's called Running for His Life, and you can catch it tonight, actually, on Showtime, guys, at, I believe, 7:30 Eastern tonight. And, Coach, you talk about him, and I know you get choked up a little bit, and you feel that maybe, you know, things would have been different if you didn't release him. But me personally, and I say this not as someone that has been condescending towards Lawrence like so many in the media have been over the years, but I'm from Montreal. I don't live there now, but I used to cover the Montreal Alouettes, and I was friends with a couple of guys on the team, you know, and I'd go out in social situations with them, and I went out with Lawrence Phillips on a couple of occasions, and I just saw him as somebody that, you know, was just sort of disconnected, but somebody, we talk about running through brick walls, that they said nobody plays harder, man, when he's on the field. And he's a good kid. You know, he's just been through a lot. He's a good kid. I'm not saying everything that Lawrence, all the decisions he made was great in his life, Coach, but I've always felt for Lawrence. I looked into his eyes and I saw a tortured soul. And I followed his story when he was incarcerated, Coach. And I don't believe that he took his own life. I think something shady happened with those guards inside there, Coach.
I do too. You know, and the show snow nicely organized and demonstrates that, you know, he was in prison. Everything he did was in cursive, in very good handwriting. You know, he tested very bright. And then all of a sudden he writes a suicide note in block printing. That didn't make much sense. But I feel for him. I would like to have an opportunity to work with him one more time. I'd been out of the league 15 years and out of coaching 15 years when I went back into it and worked with him. And I think today, especially as I finished my last year in 2005 with the Chiefs, I probably would have handled him a little bit differently, and the staff working with him probably would have handled him a little differently than they did in the 1997.
Is that one of your biggest regrets of your coaching career, Coach? Because I know you connected so well with people, and I want to say it's not your, you know, I don't know if there's any guilt, Coach, but there shouldn't be. You know, you were a coach, you did your job, he accepted it at the time, and he was on his own path one way or another. He was so impulsive, wasn't he? He reacted so quickly, didn't he, at times?
He had some deep scars evidently put in there, I would say, by his mother, that would ignite without any real due cause. And I think he was actually, he would go out of control and not really be what he really was. Because there were times you would think he was just a great young kid, you know. But obviously he had some holes deeper than a football coach could figure out.
Coach, talk about as far as him being a player. How good was he? Like, was he, you know, like, how dominant was he? I got to tell you, he went to the Canadian Football League after, and he won a Grey Cup with the Montreal Alouettes. He did win a championship and was a model teammate, never got suspended. There was never issues with it with anybody. He had a successful Canadian Football League career. And, man, like, he is almost like Earl Campbell type. Like, you know, big and fast, Coach, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was not a Marshall Faulk, a different style runner. But I would say this, he would have been, staying healthy, he would have been a perennial Pro Bowl player.
Coach Dick Vermeil with us. All right, Coach, so before we get you out of here on a positive note, I really look forward to watching this documentary, and I encourage people to, as we stated, Lawrence made mistakes in his life, but you know, what happened in that prison needs to be light shined on this a little bit, because, you know, if anything, Coach, he was positive. He was positive about his trial. I mean, even the murder inside, he was defending himself. He was in a bad spot. It was a gangster basically out to kill him because he got shown up before. Like, I really hope people look at this story, Coach.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they will. I think Showtime did a beautiful job of presenting it, too. I mean, they left you to make your decision, and they didn't slant it in any way trying to get you to believe what they believe, you know?
All right, Coach. It's always a pleasure, sir. I wish you all the best. Happy holidays and a Merry Christmas. Hopefully I can have a glass of some nice Dick Vermeil wine this holidays, sure. Coach. But continued success with the vineyard and the wine industry. And it's always a pleasure catching up with you, sir.
Karen, thank you. Merry Christmas.
There's Dick Vermeil with us. Yeah, like I said, powerful stuff. The Lawrence Phillips. I look forward to watching this. But you know, like I said, man, Lawrence Phillips did some bad things in Nebraska. You know, he did. He did some bad things, like a lot of football players have done. But you know, how his life ended, it needs to be taken a longer look at. He didn't commit suicide. All right, the guy was a fighter. He was positive till the final day. He didn't commit suicide. There was a gangster that was sent into his cell to kill him by a prison guard, all right? But check out the documentary. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Don't forget the show replays at 5 o'clock on Fantasy Sports Network Radio Networks and replays at 5:30 on the Fantasy Sports Network Television Network. Sorry, we go from one coach to another. I enjoyed catching up with Coach Dick Vermeil. Man, it's been a great run of coaches recently, hasn't it? Who do we have on the last 3 weeks? Herm Edwards, Mike Ditka, and Dick Vermeil. It's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, and Dan Reeves. But you know what? Football's not the only sport in the world. They're playing basketball. We got a couple of big games on tap of this evening. Who better to help us break them down than one of the best in the business? Coach Nick from bballbreakdown.com joins us. Coach, always a pleasure. How you doing, my man?
I am doing well, Gabe. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I always appreciate it. I know you're busy, so let's jump right in here. I swear, every time I go online, I see a story about Kawhi Leonard's defense hurting the Spurs, and it's your video. And man, it's been viewed by a hell of a lot of people, Coach. So it leads us into the Spurs and Rockets tonight. This is a fun basketball game. The Spurs, according to Vegas, are 1-point road favorites tonight, Coach. What I'm so impressed with about the Houston Rockets is they're 21-7 straight up, but they've only played 12 games at home. So they're winning on the road. And what's shocking, and you know, this it would blow people away. I bet you if you walked into a sports bar in LA and asked people, who's holding people to 98.4 points per 100 possessions on defense in the NBA? They're not telling you the Houston Rockets, Coach. They're actually playing at both ends for Coach D'Antoni.
Absolutely. It's been really exciting. And what's killing them right now is that Capella is now injured for a while with a broken fibula. So that's going to be the real question. It's up in the air with a lot of things. What the lineup is going to look like, I believe Nene is going to end up playing for him. And I think he can hold the fort down pretty well, but they're probably going to take a hit on the defensive end with that absence of Capella. But, you know, they've got some rest. They're at home. So I would feel a lot better about the Rockets than I would the Spurs necessarily.
You know, Coach, when I saw the way that Harden dealt with McHale, and just over the years, you know, with the sort of lack of respect, it almost seemed like the inmates were running the asylum. We're going to do what we're going to do. And I didn't know if D'Antoni was the right coach. They almost said they let the guys on the team win. All right, you guys want to run? You want to shoot all the time? Here's a coach that wants to do this. But, man, it's really clicked, and I'm really impressed with Harden as well. So often, Coach, over the years, Harden would frustrate me by getting everyone to get out of the way. He'd go into 1-on-1 isolation, and then he'd pass the ball with 1 second left to Chandler Parsons, who'd be forced to take a bad shot. Or, you know, it was just bad decisions, immaturity on the court. I love what Harden's doing this year.
Yeah, it's not exactly D'Antoni's offense either. There is a little bit of it happening and seeping in, but so much of what they're running is still just spread, pick, and roll for Harden and letting him go to work. And he's earning every dollar of his paycheck because he's doing so much of that work. But he's got shooters this this year. So no more of that relying on like Corey Brewer to shoot and even Trevor Ariza. He's now got bona fide shooters in Anderson and Gordon, and those two guys are spacing the floor for him really well, and that's a real big revelation for them. So I would suspect that the D'Antoni offense will seep in more, and will probably get even a little bit more of an efficient notion to their offense as they progress, because remember, it's only been 20-some games with a brand-new coach.
I'm a big Ryan Anderson fan, Coach. Do you like this guy? Like, I'm a Raptor fan. When they were in the free agent market, I was like, man, if you get a guy like Ryan Anderson, he seems to do all the little things well, and he can hit a three. I love this guy.
You know, I haven't been sold, and certainly before this year, I'd sort of thought, is he really a knockdown shooter? Like, it just sometimes didn't seem that way to me watching enough clips, but I got to tell you, this year he seems to be taking a lot more like contested shots and being more aggressive on offense, and it's worked. So, you know, he has to prove it a little bit more for me to really get sold on him, but it is a pretty good fit, and the Rockets deserve a lot of kudos for putting this team, that Daryl Morey put this team together really well.
All right, you and I discussed the Clippers, and they're somewhat future last time, and a lot of people enjoyed it. I saw it got a lot of hits online. So now they're without Blake right now again, and you know, to me, this team won't be together next year, Coach. I just don't see how you're going to keep all these guys together when they haven't taken that next step. But how do you think they play without Blake? I mean, he missed 45 games last year, and they played pretty well with him. Is it going to be more up-tempo right now? What do you expect without Blake in the lineup?
Well, you know, they should have a little bit more space, although it depends on who they're going to play in those minutes. Right now, it looked like Austin Rivers doesn't think he's going to start, so they're not going to go small. So I suppose they may go with Spates there, and that certainly will spread the floor because Spates can shoot the three a little bit, and they played really well without him last year. So they shouldn't miss too much of a beat without him, but the other problem they have is on the defensive end is that he doesn't make a lot of plays. So it actually, you could argue that they might be better on defense without him in the lineup, and that might be one of those things they're looking at when they get to the end of the year, if they don't win the whole thing, when they're going to break it up or who they're going to trade or not re-sign. Like, that might be one of the biggest reasons.
Coach, you and I talked briefly in the past about, you know, it's hard to watch every game all the time. And, you know, me being who I am and having a gambling problem that I have, Coach, you know, that's one thing I know everything. I know geography real well because of college. Like, you know, no one knows where Pullman is. I'll tell you how to get there. Not only you want to turn left on 74, you know, but so I do watch a lot of these teams, but I haven't seen a ton of the Denver Nuggets yet this year. One thing about the Nuggets, though, they really haven't been healthy. They haven't had their five guys out there on the court very often, but when they do, they're a fun team, and they're on a roll. They're putting up 125 points a game during their recent three-game run here.
The key here is they changed the starting lineup, and Mike Malone, it's funny, I had talked to him a couple of seasons ago about this, where, you know, you can learn all the X's and O's and know how to communicate, but no one will ever teach you or show you which five to play together. Yep. There's no real key to doing that. You got to do with alchemy and guessing and stuff. So they finally figured it out. I believe it looks really good so far. So Jokic and Harris in the starting lineup has been a revelation for them. Harris has been fantastic so far. Michigan State product, a guy who's tough, knows how to play fundamentals, and Jokic is a beast down there. Man, he's getting assists. He's scoring down there. He had a monster game last night, and so that guy is going to be a double-double machine with maybe four or five assists a game.
You know, it's funny. Last time we spoke, Coach, it was a similar situation. We talked about the Portland Trailblazers. They were underachieving, and they played the Clippers the next night, and I said, I'm taking the points, actually, with the Blazers, and it was a little bit risky, but they ended up losing the game by one. I know Denver played last night, but the point spread is 8.5 tonight, Coach. I think Denver gives them all they can handle. I think we're at a close ball game tonight.
For sure, especially when you lose a starter like that all of a sudden and he's gone. There's always that adjustment period, so I wouldn't be surprised to see the Clippers kind of spin their wheels in the mud for a little while in this game, and that might give them enough. And Nuggets are young, you know, so we'll have to see how that works, but I would think that it's going to be a good game.
All right, so we got about 2-3 minutes here, Coach. Let's talk about the Jazz and the Warriors. This is the classic offense versus defense. Number one defense in the National Basketball Association, the Utah Jazz, only giving up 94.6 points per game. Warriors are scoring 117.9 points per game. The Big Three now scoring 71.3. How do you see this playing out? I mean, they played a couple of weeks ago, but Hood was out. Hayward was out. You know, the Jazz weren't at full strength. Who else? George Hill Hill missed that game as well, Coach. So now the Jazz are at full strength. Very, very interesting team. Old school playing defense. How do you break this one down?
Well, what's tough is that George Hill is still out, and so they're going to have a hard time guarding Steph, it looks like. I also feel like Hayward, who's been doing really well recently, as the Jazz have been, is probably going to have a little bit of a tough time against going up against Klay Thompson, even though Klay's been getting some you know, people criticizing his defense this year. But when he's focused and engaged against a guy like that, I don't think Gordon Hayward's going to shoot that well tonight. And so it's going to be tough, but the Jazz are the one team that seems to be able to keep it closer and keep them under wraps when they're working on their defense really well. But let's not forget that the Warriors' defense is the fourth ranked in the league, having shot up from like 20th earlier in the year. So they're firing on mostly all cylinders right now.
Kevin Durant's been unbelievable. Are they better right now, Golden State? Is this team better or worse than you thought they were going to be?
Oh, I think that they're, you know, probably as good as we thought, and certainly they are the best team in the league. That crazy killer lineup with Draymond at center and KD in there instead of Harrison Barnes is like a plus 25 per 100 possessions. So they are really running through the league. KD is going to have a historic shooting year if he gets a little bit closer to where he was earlier. And the only question now is that both Klay Thompson and Draymond Green are shooting a little bit less from three than they're used to doing. And you can only imagine if they start to creep up and get closer to where they're used to being, then I don't think any team's going to touch them all the way through the finals.
All right, Coach Nick, it's always a pleasure, my man. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us. I know you're busy, but it's great stuff as always. We encourage people to check out Nick on Twitter and follow him on YouTube as well. Great, excellent insight, like on a nightly basis, immediate analysis of various NBA games. Keep up the great work. Thanks, Nick.
You got it. I'm in.
There's Coach Nick with his great stuff, man. Great show today. We come back hopefully with some great picks. It's time for our plays of the day. Let's start off with the Boca Raton Bowl. We're going to take the over in this football game. I believe that every bowl game's actually gone under the numbers so far. Not this one, guys. The Hilltoppers score like 45 points a game. Memphis score like 37 a game. Memphis can't stop anybody. Western Kentucky in their conference championship game, I think they put up over 100 actually with La Tech. Like I said, these bowl games are always hit or miss, but I think it should be a track meet this evening, and I'm going to tease the Hilltoppers to the over as well. All right, got some NBA plays. The Nets and the Raptors, man, the Nets play the quickest tempo of pace in the National Basketball Association. Meanwhile, the Raptors have one of the best offenses and most efficient offenses in the NBA. Let's go over 223. Boston Celtics and the Memphis Grizzlies. Busy night for Memphis bookies tonight, actually. Both teams in action. All right, I'm taking the Grizzlies here, man. We're getting points. Grizzlies just get no respect whatsoever. They get less respect than Rodney Dangerfield. Rockets and Spurs, good ball game here, man. I'm buying what Harden and D'Antoni are selling. Give me the Rockets as home dogs. Denver Nuggets, man. Don't look now, but the Nuggets have actually won three in a row. They've averaged 125 points per game during their win streak. Give me the 8.5 points. Blake Griffin's out of this game. He's going to be out for a prolonged period of time, and he might be out forever, actually. I wouldn't be surprised if Griffin never plays for the Clippers again. You know, trade them or whatever. Like, it's not ending well there. Jazz and the Warriors. I want to take the Jazz, but I'm not betting against the Warriors. So give me the over, man. A little bit low at 209.5, I feel. And we wrap it up with Cal Poly slow Washington over the number. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.